You are listening to Press Pass, brought to you by GNAT TV.
Hello and welcome back to another edition of Press Pass on GNAT TV. I'm Andrew McKeever, the news director here at GNAT TV's news project, and it's a pleasure to have you with us today on Thursday, August 1st. Hard to believe the summer is almost over. Certainly it's been a busy one. We're very pleased to have with us today in the studio a trio of distinguished journalists, if I may say so. Sean Cunningham is a reporter for the Chester Telegraph. Lauren Adler is a correspondent with the Manchester Journal, and Bennigan Banner, making her first appearance on the show, by the way. And I'm sure all of you already know Darren Marcy, who is the managing editor of the Manchester Journal. Thank you all for being with us today. Well, a lot going on in the news over the past few weeks, but thought just to get us started today, we'll turn to Lauren, who has been writing with the Journal for the past couple of years, but will be going on to Dartmouth College in the fall. So, will we have you back again next year?
I really hope so. I'm not really sure what next summer will hold for me, but I am definitely hoping to be back in Manchester.
So how was it you got attracted or interested in writing for the Journal? What's the story behind that?
That's a fun story, actually. So I really started to get into journalism in my high school when I joined my high school's paper at the end of my freshman year. And then the next year, I was turning 16, and I figured that I needed to find myself a summer job here in Manchester and start making some money. And so I looked at a few options, but then we actually had a subscription to the Manchester Journal, and it arrived at our house one day, and I thought, oh, I could do that. You know, I've been writing for my high school's paper. I like it. And so I emailed Greg Sikenik, who was at that time the editor, and we interviewed when I was on my spring break, actually on my 16th birthday, and he gave me a job. And so I started writing in the summer of 2017, and this is my third year.
All right. Well, so it'll be up to you, Darren, to make sure that
Let me tell you, if I can have her back.
Continuity here.
If I can have her back, absolutely, she'll be back, because she's top-notch for a young lady going into college to learn, hopefully, journalism. I'd hire her today. So.
And certainly a point in the time in the industry's situation where we want all the young journalists that we can possibly get to enter the field.
Absolutely.
More important time for the field, I can't really remember, but it's also, as we all know, the last 10, 15 years have been one of sometimes rocky transition from what was the past status quo to whatever is going to become the new status quo. Mm-hmm. Still unclear exactly what that's going to wind up being. It seems to change every year, you know, what the future is going to be.
That's
but
right.
Anyway, good to have you with us today,
Lauren. Yes, thank you so much for having
me.
I
really appreciate you stopping by and being on our panel. So, Darren, you had a big story in last week's Journal about the retirement of Police Chief Michael Hall. He'd been on the Manchester Police Force for over 30 years. So I thought what was interesting about the story was his comments about how it takes a toll on the families.
Yeah, Mike, I've only known Mike, obviously, for 8 months or so. But in that time, I found him to be he's a thinking man's police officer. He's, some guys are they rely on their physical strength and stuff. This guy uses his brain. And that didn't surprise me at all when he made those comments. And for those who didn't read the story, Mike came out and said that one of the things that people always say when they're retiring, I wouldn't change a thing. It's been a great run. And he said, no, absolutely, I would change a lot of things. And that surprised me right there. But then he started listing the things that they would change. And he said, I would have spent more time with my family. Mm-hmm. I would have spent more time with friends. I wouldn't have worked the overtime. I wouldn't, those kinds of things. And I thought it was really revealing because, the life of a police officer and just other professions, it takes a large toll on your family life. The divorce rates among police officers and things are skyrocketing. Mm. And he said it. He regrets looking back on a career and making the decisions that he made for his professional life and not for his family and personal life. So it was very interesting and I thought very honest. Mm. Something I didn't expect.
Yeah. Well, certainly a very challenging job and seeming to becoming more so with the arrival of body cameras on, verifying everything, and a lot of actions being double-checked and new information coming to light. I would imagine it's a very pressure-packed job, even probably always has been, but certainly more so today than ever.
And Mike, Chief Hall, is he's old school. You know, he was a police officer before all of the things that they deal with now, like you say, the cameras and the oversight and things like that. And there's a tone in this country that the world doesn't trust the police officers as much as they did. When I was a kid, if a police officer told you that something, that's the way it was. In today's age, it goes to the internet and the community decides whether or not the police officer is right or not. And Mike has seen that transition and he's not real thrilled with the changes that he's seen over the course of his career. And I don't think he's sad that he's retiring at this point. I think he's ready for, or as he said, to wake up in the morning and not have anything to do.
So. That sounds good to me. So Patrick Owens is going to be the new chief, I gather. Yes. He's already been sworn in and everything? And
Chief Owens now was sworn in Monday evening at a special ceremony. His family and friends and fellow officers were there. He is, if I'm not mistaken, only the third chief in recent history. Dana Thompson, Chief Wessner.
Chief Wessner. And then there was Jim Baker.
Baker was an interim. Or, and then Mike Hall. Yeah. So yeah. I guess the fourth, I guess.
I guess if you take the job, you hang around for a while.
That's right.
Anyway, meanwhile, up in the mountain, Sean, up in your neck of the woods, there, folks in Londonderry have been having some fun, I guess that might be one way to put it, batting a proposal around about some changes that might be made at the Lowell Lake State Park. Bring us up to speed on that.
Not just Londonderry. There's people from all the surrounding communities who have been upset that the state is looking at plans to change the park, put in more parking, do cabins for overnight stays. It's now a day park, and to begin charging. And so there's no charge at this point. It's an undeveloped park. It's a beautiful lake, beautiful scenes. People go there. They take. There's no motorized anything, so they take their kayaks or their boards, and they go and spend the time on the lake, or they hike around a 3-mile trail. And it's become a very popular place for people in the area to go and get some exercise and relax. The state bought it, a portion of it originally in the 70s, and then the rest of it in the late 90s or mid to late 90s, and began working on an idea for doing exactly this, and then didn't have the money to do it. So it has been sitting there for 20 years being used by the local people. And now with this, there are a number of people who are upset that they're going to lose the thing that they have in that park. It's a beautiful place. If you look at highest and best use, probably, something else should be happening. But at the same time, these people feel that they've had 20 years of this and they've gotten accustomed to it. So that's the crux of it. And now it's a sort of a pitched battle sometimes with people really not trusting the state to do what it says it's going to do and control things or whatever. They simply are suspicious. This is going back to the idea of the police. Mm-hmm. And years ago it would be one thing. Well, at this point, you walk in to an event and where they're presenting this, and their people are asked to sign in, and one woman I standing next to said, "I'm not going to do that. That's what they want." Well,
wow. Okay.
So it's kind of a battle, and it'll be interesting to see how it plays out. But right now, there's a citizens group that's been pulled together, and there are people on the other side, mostly people who seem to feel that, it's a state park, and the state should be able to do with it what it wants to do, and it's for everybody, not just for a group of people who happen to go there on Monday afternoon and have the place to themselves. It'll be interesting to see where it goes.
So right now they're in a 60-day comment period, I believe,
yes.
Following that presentation or whatever, open house,
yes,
at the Londonderry Town Hall. So that'll take us, I guess, towards the end of September, I guess, before anything further happens. I mean, it seems like the big issue, one of the biggest sort of irritating points, is the idea of these overnight cabins that the state wants to either rebuild or install. It used to be a place where people would go and stay overnight back in the 40s and 50s and 60s before they all...
It has a history of lodging there going back to the 1880s. And there have been different iterations of that. It's been a children's camp. It's been family camping. It's been a hotel. There are a lot of different things there. And there are a lot of buildings. Recently, the state applied to have the entire campus of buildings designated a historic site. And the question is, you know, they're also coming in and saying, well, if we do this, we're going to use this one and this one and this one and this one, and the rest of them are going to be demolished. So you have a historic site that's declared, and then you're going to demolish buildings. So there's just a lot of moving parts in this.
Well, to be continued for sure. We'll have to keep our eyes on that because it definitely has gotten a lot of attention up in that neck of the woods.
I've been struck by the animosity, the locals versus the state. Our reporter covering this, the most recent meeting, and that's one of the points that she was struck by, too. It's just the level of animosity.
And it doesn't seem like it's necessary in a way. It seems as though it's one of those situations where you just fire all the guns, you know, right from the get-go. Mm-hmm. And it's difficult to understand sometimes, you know, the harshness of it when there seems to be the possibility of talking about it. And I just don't know where that's going.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Well, we'll be following that one for sure. Meanwhile, Lauren, you had a story in last week's paper about housing issues in Arlington. The Arlington Restoration Project there had a summit meeting about housing down in Arlington a couple of months ago and highlighted some of their concerns about the lack of affordable housing for folks who wanted to live there. I understand there's one organization that's going to try and make it a little bit easier for folks to be able to buy a reasonable-sized home in Arlington.
Yes. So NeighborWorks of Western Vermont has recently received a grant to make it easier for people to buy, you know, sort of the old classic Vermont farmhouse that would ordinarily be very expensive to fix up and make that easier for people. And in so doing, they're partnering with the Arlington Area Renewal Project, and that project is hoping to attract some of the employees who actually live outside of the town limits to move into Arlington and have a shorter commute to work. And they're also hoping to attract more families because the truth is that the population in their schools has been decreasing over the past few years. And so they're hoping that with more affordable housing options, they'll be able to attract a few more young families and hopefully increase their population in the school, but also sort of lead to a greater social cohesion in town.
So NeighborWorks, would they own the house and the family sort of buys it over a period of time from them or?
The way that I think it works is that NeighborWorks has a grant to sort of fix up these houses and then they are put up for sale. And they also can help with sort of more flexible mortgage options for people who ordinarily wouldn't be able to qualify for a traditional mortgage from a bank. NeighborWorks can help out with that. And I know that a lot of this is based on a program that was started in Rutland, actually, when Jim Baker was the police chief there, and he's now the executive director of the Arlington Area Renewal Project. So I did talk to him for this article, and he said that with this NeighborWorks program, he really does think that they'll be able to attract more families and also just sort of lead to a safer and more, you know, a better community in Arlington.
Jim Baker's been part of, or was part of, a renewal effort in Rutland when he was interim police chief at the Rutland City Police. And he seems to be brought in to fix problems, and that's kind of been his MO for the last 10 or 15 years. You know, he went in and cleaned up the police academy, I think that's what it's called. He brought into Rutland when they had their issues.
Instrumental is getting Project Vision started.
Yeah, Project Vision. And that's a big part of what Lauren is referring to is, they have neighborhoods that they've tried to rebuild from the ground up, basically by bringing in families to they'll take over a house that's been a drug infested, crime ridden type place, rehab it through NeighborWorks, and then get families to move into the community. And they're trying to change communities that way. And it's been relatively successful. And so now it looks like Jim is trying to, or Baker, Mr. Baker, call him Jim, it sounds like he's trying to take a playbook. And in fact, as Lauren said in her article, that he's just borrowing from that playbook. Mm. And I have no doubt it's probably going to work in the Arlington area.
Well, I mess with success. I guess they exactly. Certainly did seem to do quite well in Rutland. I remember talking to Jim also, and one of his favorite expressions was, you change the environment and you change the neighborhood, and you change the behavior in the neighborhood. Mm-hmm. So, down in Arlington, of course, a little bit different situation there. But, like you pointed out, they do have concerns that, if enrollment trends at the school continue the way they're going, that raises questions, and plus, you just want to have, I think, some of these old buildings inhabited.
Yeah, of course. Something that he said to me was that good, safe housing leads to good, safe neighborhoods, and that was something that he saw as police chief, and that's something that he's been seeing in Arlington. And so I think that's really where they hope the project will go. And
of course, probably almost every community in Vermont could probably say, well, we need more young folks, too, affordable housing.
And that's a key point. Schools, especially in a community like Arlington, is so important. I mean, that's the lifeblood of the community. We saw it last fall with the soccer teams and those kinds of things. And then folks talked about it when those teams, the boys and girls soccer teams, won state titles. The community, that you can just see the swell of pride in the community. And so you have to protect your schools and do whatever you've got to do. And it looks like they're trying to get ahead of that problem.
Well, Sean, back over to you again for a quick second here. You were telling us a little bit about some interesting-sounding school lawsuits going on up your way.
It came out of the blue. We were doing some research and in the court and came across a lawsuit that was, working its way through. It was just recently filed. And then we did a little bit more research and found there was another one. And then we found that there were a number of other things going on. And recently there was a announcement that the school system had been is about to have an investigation by the Attorney General's office on discrimination charges, and so there's just a lot. But what we found out when we asked about this at a board meeting was that the board, both the board of the Green Mountain Unified School District and the TRSU board, Two River Supervisory Union, none of the board members knew about this. So it became a sort of cause celeb for a couple of weeks that
I'm sure
this is something that they're not telling us. It's kind of fed into a number of issues of lack of transparency within the supervisory union. So we just keep following that.
Was there any reason given why everyone was being so tight-lipped about it?
There wasn't. When this came up, they said, well, this is something that we need to discuss. The legal spending, which was 300% of budget for the group, was something they spoke about in an open session. But as soon as they started talking about the lawsuits, they went into executive session, and so that was closed off. But there were a number of board members who had absolutely no idea, or all of them, and a number of them who were upset about it. So we'll see where that goes.
Yeah, I'm sure they were. Wow.
Good old-fashioned reporting. I like to see it.
Yeah, right. That's why you need a newspaper. We've got a couple of minutes left here. Just a few things to sum up as well, because it's been a busy couple of weeks, it seems like, over at Burn Burton. The Roland project was unveiled. Really fascinating looking concept they're working on there. $20 million project to create a new 25,000 square foot, I guess you'd call it a classroom building. But there's a definite rethink about how the education is going to be pervade. Classroom neighborhoods is, I guess, the idea that to have subject matter kind of clumped together so that you would have, three or four classrooms together that are working on math or history or English at the same time. And also a very big, ambitious attempt to get more STEAM. Let me see if I get that acronym right. Science, technology, engineering, arts, and mechanics.
Math.
I was thinking math, but I wasn't going to say
so. Darn it, so close. But anyway.
Back to school.
yeah, no kidding. Certainly quite an imaginative project. Fascinating to see that the lead architect is a graduate of the school, mm-hmm. Class of 2007, a relatively young man who has come up with a really interesting concept for it that will really change the look of the back of the campus there when the construction is finished. And I believe in June of 2021 is when that would be all done. But that'll be a game changer for sure. Also,
I'm sorry, I'm just related BBA, not related, but BBA related. At the Manchester Select Board meeting Tuesday night, Mark Tashin, headmaster, was at the approached the board with the idea of building a running track, a track and field facility out at the rec park. And from what I understand, this is something that's been talked about for a couple of years, but they've gotten serious. He and town manager John O'Keefe have come up with a rough plan. When I say rough, it's a solid plan. It's just preliminary. Mm-hmm. And they proposed it to the board Tuesday night, and the board was receptive. You know, they say, well, you know, we can't stamp this right now and say go, but there's the absolutely support among the board. They're wanting to put it out there on the Knapp Field area of the rec park.
Okay.
And it's going to be a regular track with the long jump and high jump pits and the whole thing. And Mark Cashin says that it's one of their most it's one of their school teams, sports teams, that I think they had 83 kids out in the spring, and they don't have a facility. So
and no room to build one, I guess.
Yeah, so it's something to watch. Something's going to be coming up. We have it in the paper this week, and we'll be following that as that progresses.
And one last note, kind of a sad one, actually. Found out this morning before we went on the air that the Village Picture Shows, the only movie theater in Manchester, has announced it will be closing its doors on August 22nd, I believe, about 3 weeks or so from now. We don't know anything more about it, really, as to whether or not it's going to relocate to a new location, close down completely, what's going to happen, but certainly hope for the best there as part of that whole reconfiguration of the Manchester Shopping Plaza, Price Chopper, which now has been kind of, you know, revised again for the umpteenth time.
Yeah, see what happens there.
and basically kind of a back to the way we were. No far-reaching overhaul now, but just sort of some cosmetic tweaking here and there. But I guess part of the shuffle means that the Village Picture Shows no longer has a space. So hopefully that story will have a happy ending.
Yeah, we'll be talking to Michael pretty soon about this. There's a lot of people I think that are hoping that he might have something up his sleeve. I don't know that. I'm not trying to hint at anything, but a lot of people are thinking that perhaps there's something down the road that he's working on and just hasn't talked about yet.
Well, it'd be interesting to see if they want to move it. You know, the space requirements I would think for a movie theater are somewhat different for a clothing store. Yeah. I would think, but we'll find out when we find out, I guess. Okay, well, that'll have to do it for us for today. I want to thank you all for being with us. I want to thank also Sean Cunningham of the Chester Telegraph, Lauren Adler of the Manchester Journal, Darren Morrissey of the Manchester Journal for being with us today. Hope you found the show interesting and informative, and we'll see you again the next time. Have a great day.
Thanks for listening local. For more local content, visit gnat.tv.